The history of Stonehenge, the area around Stonehenge. Now, I've spent a lot of time talking about the background and history and all sorts of things with Stonehenge, but there are lots of other archaeological sites that are around it that are of interest. So I'm going to give you a little background to all of those. They will be Stonehenge Curus, the Winterbourne Stoke Crossroads and Longbarrow, Durrington Walls, of course Woodhenge, my favorite, and a little something about the River Avon in prehistory. The Stonehenge Curses. Now, this was built long before the first Stonehenge. This was an elongated earthwork enclosure with a ditch and a bank that defines an area more than 100 meters wide and 1.7 miles long. It runs east-west across the downland to the north of Stonehenge, crossing a shallow valley towards the central part. The ditches on its long sides were small, a little over 3 feet deep, and when investigated, they were found to be irregularly dug. Both ends appear to have been defined by a much larger ditch and corresponding bigger banks. Its eastern end stops just short of a leveled Neolithic long barrow, while a round barrow stands within its western end. It was first noted by the early 18th century antiquarian William Stukeley, who decided it was Roman in date and had been built for racing chariots or horses, hence the name he gave it, Cursus or Hippodrome, both classical words for racetracks. He, of course, was wrong about the date. It was built in the early Neolithic period, about 3400 BC, when many long barrows were also being built. However, its function still remains uncertain. The few finds from the ditches suggest that it may have been laid out as a special or sacred space, perhaps for processions or as a barrier across the landscape. The entire length of Stonehenge Curses lies on National Trust open access land. The gap through Fargo Plantation marks the width of the Stonehenge Curses at this, its western end, where the earthworks have actually been partially reconstructed. Then we go to Winterbourne Stoke. Now, the long barrow at Winterbourne Stoke Crossroads, which formed the focus of a later Bronze Age round barrow cemetery, has a mound over 80 meters long and 25 meters wide. Flanking it are traces of the quarry ditches that supplied the material for its construction. Human remains were discovered in the 1860s underneath the wider and higher northern end of the mound. These remains have recently been radiocarbon dated and show that the long barrow was built about 3500 BC. Now, long barrows are usually ancestral tombs containing groups of burials that may lie within a wooden or stone structure, basically a symbolic house for the dead. Spectacular when first built, its white chalk mound highly visible in the landscape. This long barrow was raised not simply to contain bones, but as a way of establishing a claim to the land on which it stood. Then we come to Durrington Walls. In about 2500 BC, when the great stones were being brought to Stonehenge, there were other henges, or enclosures, of chalk and timber that were being built within the surrounding landscape. The greatest of these was Durrington Walls, a massive enclosure over 470 meters in diameter that lies within the broad hollow of the west bank of the River Avon, nearly 2 miles northeast of Stonehenge. Durrington is a more traditional henge, with a huge bank lying outside an equally massive ditch, but despite its size, it is difficult to see from ground level. There are four entrances to the enclosure, the most obvious one pointing southeast down towards the river. Excavations were carried out between 1966 and 68 on the line of the road that cuts through the henge, which revealed the ditch to be over 6 meters deep and 13 meters wide. It was also uncovered the remains of two complex timber structures, the northern circle and the larger southern circle, which is 23 meters in diameter. Each of these had multiple concentric settings of large timbers and produced quantities of pottery, animal bones, and flint tools. More recent excavations from 2004 onward have shown that, like Stonehenge, Durrington has an avenue, a graveled pathway which runs through the southern circle, through the southeastern entrance, and down to the River Avon. This avenue also has a solstice alignment, marking sunset at the midsummer and sunrise at midwinter. Close by, and preserved under a huge hinge bank, the remains of a Neolithic series of houses was discovered, first to have been found in southern Britain. Recent geophysical survey and excavations at Durrington Walls have shown that the earthwork henge was preceded by a circuit of about 300 freestanding timber posts forming an enormous palisaded enclosure. Standing about 5 meters apart, each post would have stood up to 5 meters in height. It seems likely these posts were erected after the houses were abandoned, but before the construction of the henge bank and the ditch. The houses were small and roughly square, the majority about 5 meters across. The walls of the woven hazel covered in daub, and inside a square floor of hard-packed chalk, in the center of which was a hearth. The space between the chalk floor and the outer wall may have been filled with wooden furniture, beds, and cupboards. In their layout, these houses are almost identical to those of the same date from Scarabrah, a Neolithic settlement in Orkney, where the walls and furniture are made of stone and have therefore survived for over 4,000 years. Separating the individual houses were fences of wooden stakes against which rubbish had piled up. Large quantities of animal bones, mostly young pig, suggest large-scale feasting, possibly in midwinter. The discovery of these houses and the evidence of similar structures from other points around the henge show that before the enclosure was built, there may have been hundreds of houses and perhaps thousands of people living at Durrington. This may be the largest Neolithic settlement in Britain and Ireland, although probably only occupied at certain times of the year. It's possible that these were the houses of the people who built and used Stonehenge. Other houses, some larger and surrounded by deep ditches like smaller henges, were found inside the main enclosure as well. Now, these lack the evidence of everyday life, food, cooking, that characterize most of the houses and may have been a special, possibly ritual function. Timber circles discovered in the 1960s and recently re-examined and reinterpreted also appear to have had a ritual rather than a practical function. The timbers were also raised before the enclosure was built, but even after they had rotted away, the place where they stood was still regarded as special and marked by deposits of animal bones and pottery. Again, more evidence of cooking and feasting. Durrington Walls is physically linked to Stonehenge by the River Avon, and eventually by the Stonehenge Avenue. Its houses, everyday life, and timber circles, more of which are found nearby close at Woodhenge, are seen by some as the land of the living. In contrast, Stonehenge, with its cremated human bones and circles of cold stone, is regarded as the land of the dead. Whether or not this is how our Neolithic ancestors regarded their world can't be proved, but Stonehenge and Durrington are certainly closely linked. And then we have, of course, my favorite, which is just south of Durrington Walls, and that is Woodhenge. Originally revealed by aerial photographs taken in 1925 to be a leveled henge, the bank and internal ditch enclosure a circle area about 50 meters in diameter, with a single enclosure facing northeast. Shortly after its discovery, the site was excavated by Maud Cunnington. Her work revealed that within the interior lay 6 concentric circles of pits, varying considerably in size and having originally held large upright oak timbers. Because of the similarity of this plan to that of Stonehenge, this site became known as Woodhenge. Now, Woodhenge did gain some stones, assumed to be sarsens, late in its life, but they were subsequently removed. From the ground plan, these timber circles, like those at Durrington Walls, are difficult to interpret. The upright timbers may have stood in the open air, either plain or highly decorated. They may have been linked together by horizontal beams to create a wooden version of Stonehenge, or may have even been the framework for a huge building. The finds made in the excavation at Woodhenge include decorated grooved ware pottery, flint tools, and animal bones, apparently deposited in a very organized manner, perhaps at the base of the timber posts before they rotted away. Each of the timber circles, may have had a different meaning or use. Some had more pottery, some more animal bones. But perhaps the most disturbing find was a grave that lay in the center of the site. Now marked by a small flint cairn, it contained the skeleton of a child about the age of 3. The excavator suggested that the child's skull had been split, but a more likely explanation is that the individual bones of the skull had not fused together at the time of the child's death. Woodhenge was built also around 2500 BC and is now under the care of the English Heritage. And then finally, the River Avon. The prehistoric people who lived in the Stonehenge area, its rivers and valleys are of course quite vital. It's a source of water for drinking, both for people and for domesticated animals. And it also supplied food. Edible plants grew in the damper soils. Fish, trout, and salmon could be caught, while deer and other wild animals could be hunted as they came to drink. Otters and beavers, valued for their fur, swam in the river's clear waters. But beyond these practical uses, the possibility that its waters were used to transport the bluestones on the last stage of the journey from Wales, the river may have actually had a more spiritual importance. Precious objects deposited in rivers and lakes show that prehistoric people regarded their waters as sacred. Some archaeologists have actually put forward the idea that the river was part of the journey taken by the dead from Durrington to Stonehenge, as both have avenues, physical connections, with the flowing waters. So there's more of the River Avon than just William Shakespeare. These are the other sites that you find around Stonehenge, so you can really make a full day of going to all these places. So I hope you've enjoyed the little Stonehenge sideline that I did here. And the sources for this, Stonehenge by Bishop, Stonehenge and Neighboring Monuments by J.C. Atkinson, Stonehenge of the Kings by Crampton, Stonehenge Decoded by Hawkins, and Beyond Stonehenge by Hawkins. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com. Ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.